I'm very grateful to the organizer of having been invited here and even asked to talk at this conference. I don't believe I've had a more distinguished audience as apologist before, which is all the more embarrassing for me because I think, despite my initial optimism, I'm nowhere near having really finished the project I'm going to talk about that I just started. So what I would like to explain today is how a topological idea, which started simply by studying representations of loop groups having to do with twisted K-theory, is converging with some ideas of Coates and Giebenthal about twistings in Gromov-Witten theory, and seems to output a topological determination of the Gromov-Witten theory of BG for any compact group G or complex reductive group G. And there is some hope that having that in place, one can understand equivariant versions of Gromov-Witten theory correctly. Unfortunately, I'm nowhere near understanding these things. I would not be able to explain them, but I'll talk about them a little bit anyway. So let's say more precisely then what the project is, and then I'll explain what the ingredients are that will lead to a calculation. We're not finished with the calculations, so we've just started, as I said, so I won't be able to write a formula for you. So the project would be a topological determination of the Gromov-Witten theory of BG twisted with descendants. Whatever that means, I hope I get to explain what this means at least, and why it's, I think, accessible topologically. So it started out, as I said, it's made possible. One can try to think about it because of a result of mine with Dan Fried and Mike Hopkins, which let's say gives a topological understanding to loop group representations in the Berlinde algebra. So it gives a topological of the Berlinde ring. That is one special case, in fact, of Gromov-Witten theory for BG. So that's where it starts. And it builds then on later work I continue with Chris Woodward at Rutgers, where we proceed to give index formulas for essentially essentially any reasonable holomorphic bundle over the moduli of holomorphic vector bundle over the moduli of bundles on a Riemann surface, again in purely topological terms, for vector bundles over the moduli of G bundles on Riemann surfaces. And we did that simply, we wrote an index formula that's a number, but in the method actually works in families. So when families are interesting, when you start varying the curve, and when you start varying the curve, that index, that number, becomes a Gromov-Witten invariant of VG. So in families, this gives GW invariant for the classifying space. Unfortunately, one interesting feature of this is that it works integrally. Essentially, all calculations in Gromov-Witten theory are rational, whereas this one, which uses K-theory instead of cohomology, seems to lead to integral answers. Unfortunately, this last bit isn't quite true, so I should say for the non-abelian case, we use a localization theorem that forces us to invert a bit. So right now, I don't see a prospect of getting a complete integral determination. You have to invert a few things which depend on the group and the level. We need to invert a few things four explicit formulas, but there is a candidate for an integral theory that satisfies all the properties you might want from a topological field theory defined K theoretically. So, but there is an integral candidate. And some work in progress about getting this right, making sure things work integrally as opposed to rationally, is happening now jointly with Kostya Feldman from Cambridge, studying integrality question. Yes? Yes, yes. So, index formulas for vector bundles over something which disappeared up there somewhere. That's the G. So perhaps I should say what one eventually, G bundles, what eventually one expects the answer to be like. We're not finished, or we can't tell, but what the expected answer. It's not going to be very exciting from the point of view of Gromov-Witten theory, because it's meant to be essentially a sum of Gromov-Witten invariants for a point, but after some change of coordinates. So, sum of GW theories for a point after coordinate change. I hope I'll explain a bit about what this means. Coordinate change. And there are two reasons to expect that. One, because finite groups have actually been computed, and that's the answer. And so you don't need a coordinate change there, really. And the other reason is you expect this to be the answer any time the underlying Frobenius algebra of the theory is semi-simple, which it is in this case. It's very hard to give a precise formulation without listing some equations I never quite remember, but that's conjectured by, I think, Gibbenthal and Dubrovin, that would be the case for Gromov-Witten theories whenever the Frobenius algebra is semi-simple. It's almost, there's an abstract formulation of this conjecture, so conjecture, Gibbenthal, and recently there's some progress by Dubrovin, I understand. Whenever the underlying Frobenius algebra is semi-simple, the sum reduction formula for the Gromov-Witten invariants of whatever it was you're studying to the theory for a point. You can reduce the theory for a point. So that was proved by Gibbenthal for the genus 0 invariant, and I heard recently Dubrovin is claiming it for any genus, so proved by Gibbenthal. But I haven't seen a paper yet, so I haven't seen the talk either, so it's hearsay. So in terms of examples of, if you want to see new numbers or something, probably not in the center. The old theory, but I think it's interesting still that we expect to actually find it integrally in K theory as opposed to just computing rational things. So now, if I did a lot of big words in the introduction, because the talk will actually step back to much simpler things, which are the only ones I really understand. So I'll give you some background of what all these things are, what they mean, and then I'll explain enough that we can see why it's possible to get a topological determination of the Gromov-Witten theory for BG. But I must say that even for U1, for the circle group, we don't have the complete answer. We know what goes in. We know roughly what form it takes. But last week at Rutgers with Chris, we spent a few days computing it, and we can reduce it now to a long sum of things involving a symmetric group. But we know what kind of classes, what kind of classes go in. But not much more right now. So, background now. Right. So, I'll start with at the risk of boring most of the audience, I will actually really remind you of well-known things. So, recall that Well, what's a topological field theory first? Let's say two-dimensional topological field theory. Well, to an oriented circle, you assign a vector space, and the only assignment will be multiplicative, so this joint union of circles goes to the tensor product. For example, the empty set would have to go to the ground field. And to a surface, to a coordinate between unions of circles, you associate a linear map, and this must be compatible with composition. So this guy goes to a linear map from V tensor V to V. And this guy here, disk with sort of an outgoing, well, a disk with an incoming boundary and outgoing empty set, is a map from V to K. This guy is an element 1 in V, it's a map from K to V. And all in all, what you get from here, if you call this M multiplication, there's a, I think it's a folklore theorem that specifying a two-dimensional topological field theory is the same as specifying a Frobenius algebra. So 2D CFTs, the same as Frobenius algebras. Over K, which means commutative, associative algebra with a linear map from V to K such that the bilinear form you associate to it is non-degenerate, such that theta, so A tensor B goes to theta of AB is non-degenerate. So this gets a little bit more interesting when you start allowing, well, I suppose if Grothendieck had done it, he would have done it from the start, but since he didn't do this sort of thing, it took a little bit of time before people started looking at this, but they did. So if you start, instead of looking at, well, one example of this, if you look at the family, so of course, let's do it in families. For the families, you, well, there are now several variations, but let's call, refer to all of them as, say, families, topological field theories. How about FTFT? All right. So, what do we have? We're going to have a family of circles, family of surfaces, and everything should work. So, there are actually two slightly different versions. And let me write a stronger one first. So, two important differences and then lots of minor ones. So, for a circle bundle over any base, you want to get a flat bundle with fiber V. Of course, I want this to be functorial, so there's a universal circle bundle, I think, and it lives over CP infinity, which is simply connected, so in fact, you could just say trivialized bundle with fiber V instead, but as a special feature of the dimension. In general, we'd be asking for flat. So by functoriality. And pi 1 of CP infinity is trivial, implies really it's a trivial bundle. So these are somehow your bundles of states. And then if you have surface bundle between them, you want a linear map having something to do with a base. And here there are some variations. So for us, so that is number one. That's number two. Surface bundle should lead to, let's say this way, cohomology class in the base with coefficients of the HOM between the incoming V's, V to the incoming V to the outgoing. Incidentally, this makes things look nice and more like in physics, but of course once we have this duality between incoming and outgoing circles, so the duality can be realized simply by this picture. You can go between incoming and outgoing circles like that, using non-degeneracy, so in fact you could always assume that your circles are all outgoing, so it's a bit unnecessary to put all this. You could just have one type of circle. And this must satisfy same axioms, but in families. Must be functorial. And satisfy same axioms by solving axioms. Right, so here are some variations. Instead of cohomology, you could take something in A star, which is the DGA model for the base, for the rational cohomology of the base. Or, more relevant to us, you can look at K theory. So I think this guy would be called a cohomological field theory. This guy would be called sometimes topological conformal field theory, and this you could call it a K-theoretic field theory. Why not? K-star of the base, A-star of the base. Okay? And that looks like a lot of information, but of course there is a universal effect surface bundle. So, by functorial, I didn't have to check it for that. So, remark. Conformal, topological conformal field theory. Well, yes, in a second. Okay, so, right. So, remark, the universal surface bundle, at least in the hyperbolic case, lives over the moduli space of Riemann surfaces of the appropriate genus and marked points. Riemann surfaces. So I'm lying, I think, in genus 0 and 1, probably, but let's not worry about that for now. Let's call that M, G, N, means genus G, N marked points. Because the circles don't have to be parametrized for these. They're circle bundles. I remember nothing. You just have to remember where the circle was on a surface, meaning you want a marked point. So it suffices to give the data, suffices to prescribe this for MGN, for the base, is MGN. I think that's where conformal comes from. Right. I mean it tells you how it varies from when you change the conformal structure. You mean the thing about automorphism of surfaces or something, or yeah, I mean, is that what? Yes, yes. Right. So this is an orbifold, really, not manifold. Is that correct? Yes. All right. Very, very good. I mean, that's the word stronger means here. Okay, so now we have that. What's the weaker version? Okay. Weaker version requires circles to have a base point, because that's essentially all you need to specify to pin down the circle. You can say that all the circle boundaries are trivial, and all the boundary circles are parametrized. So the boundary circles are parametrized. So topologically, you have to specify the base point on each circle, so that all these circle bounds have sections. So, and then the universal object on the base would be the moduli space of surfaces with parametrized boundaries this time. Yes. For everything above. Did I? No. So the word conformal here, the way I've seen it used, it's possible that people use it differently. It simply refers to the fact that if you say that, you get information about the moduli space of conformal structure on Riemann surfaces. But there is no conformal field theory underlying that. Although you do get examples of this from conformal field theory. Is that? No. So, well, I said I lied in genus in the non-hyperbolic case, but the mapping class group really has a homotopy type of PDF. So yes, I lied in genus 0 and 1, if you don't have enough marked points. But that's really true. Okay, so weaker boundary circles are parameterized now. So universal base is now moduli of surfaces parameterized boundaries. There's no other way of putting it. But there is a finite dimensional model for it. As Jack was pointing out, it's enough to specify only tangent vector at each marked point here. So it's going to be a surface bundle over this MGN. So that gives you a base point on the small circle around it. So suffices to specify unit tangent vector at each marked point. You work functorially over all bases at the same time, but because it's a universal base, if I just specify the information here, of course, the place where I lie is it's a bit difficult if you work over this to specify the sewing axioms, because you have to start cutting and so on in families. I didn't do that yet, and I probably won't write it completely. I really prefer to conserve and money for that. But here's the nice thing. Let me make sure I don't forget something. So there's not, I think, a substantial difference between these guys, except the obvious one, that you're working in one case with co-cycles, in another with classes, in another one with K-theory, so whatever. But there's a substantial difference between this, what I call the stronger and the weaker version. And it's captured by the following proposition, which is folklore. Well, I shouldn't say that. So I think some version of it is folklore, but I've heard of a very nice formulation of it recently by, so, idea perhaps. It's folklore, but a nice formulation, which I'm not sure I can be able to repeat. It sounds very good, but I can't quite repeat it. Nice formulation is Kevin Costello. Namely, if we impose this stronger condition, if you allow a circle bundle to move unrestricted, then this theory extends to the boundary of the moduli space. So stronger, whatever, ST extends naturally to the compactified, the Riemann-Mumford moduli spaces. So recall they parameterize nodal curves. They parameterize nodal curves with marked points. Marked points and finitely many automorphisms. So, and no intersecting automorphisms. So the formulation that I'm not sure I'm repeating correctly is something like that. That what is, if you take the homotopy quotient of the operad of smooth surfaces with parameterized boundary, homotopy quotient by the rotation action of the boundary, you get, in the category of operads, whatever that is, you get a Berlin-Mumford operad. But I'm assured this is the same as, or roughly the same as what I said before. Well, this is actually weaker because it tells you about a certain kind of structure over that of operad as opposed to the operad itself. So here, let me explain how you do the extension of the boundary, because it's actually important and it's the reason why I think we can understand BG, for example, topologically, and we may be able to avoid completely the difficult problem of compactifying moduli space of bundles over nodal curves. So extension of the boundary. So what happens at the boundary? So at the boundary, something like that, this cube becomes, let me talk about this boundary only, this something having to do with the marked points too. Oops, these guys are touching, of course. They're already touching, they're crossing, and of course you can't draw that. So let me draw it more sensibly. So the typical family is parametrized by t, and is given by the equation xy equals t. So over 0 you get two crossing lines, away from 0 you get something nice and smooth. Okay. And you have something that's been defined in this family away from 0 and like to extend a natural extension across over 0. Okay. So, well, what happens topologically? It's a bit hard to actually draw the whole family, but let's draw what happens on a circle around 0. So on circle around 0, you get this Dane twisted family of cylinders. So this is a base circle. You have a cylinder, a bundle of cylinders over every fiber. But if you take a generator here, circuits are parametrized now. If you take a generator here and you move it around, you get this fellow. If you forget the parametrization, of course, nothing happens. It's all trivial, and that's in fact a nice rotation action. So, nice rotation action. Action. If you ignore parametrization. Parametrization. Okay. But, of course, if you have a parametrization, then what you can do is this. Sorry, I shouldn't have written anything to the right. What you can do is you can glue it onto somewhere else, some other fixed surface. That's continuous somewhere else. And that would give you a family of surfaces, the family of surfaces around the nodal generation. Okay, but you need to remember the parametrization for that. Okay. And now we use the fact that writing the element corresponding to the cylinder, corresponding to the cylinder as an element in beta tensor V, but writing that does not require parametrization of the boundaries. We assume that. Well, at the same time, because of the circle action, rotates the whole thing, so we would have had an element in the K theory of the base with coefficients in beta tensor V, which then can be glued onto the other surface. But because I didn't need to remember the parametrization, I can rotate the picture. It's actually in the equivariant K theory. But that's kind of nothing. So it is naturally identified with simply B tensor V. In other words, this family of operators here going around the circle is naturally trivialized, so actually I can extend it across over 0. There's no choice about it. So the propagator can be extended across 0. Sorry? K theory of equivariant K theory of S1 for the circle action of S1 is equivariant K theory of the point. It comes from cutting. So you cut this cylinder. This surface actually stays fixed. Nothing happens there. This cylinder gives you an element in there. Why is S1 equivariant? Because the cylinder bundle is S1 equivariant. And I did not require circles to be parametrized in order to construct the operator. I did not require parametrized boundary. So that's the thing. Once you see, before that, you can't put a circle action on this family of surfaces. It doesn't exist, right? But you can factor the element in the field theory as you filled it that picture. And on the piece that matters, that's actually more, you can put the circle action naturally. So it's one equivariant. So it extends. Right. I'm not convinced. Well. Okay. Alright. Let's believe it for now. So in fact, when I wrote cohomological field theory, when if you look at the axioms of Concevich and Mandel, right away it should be defined over the compactified moduli space. So it should be said the weaker form of cohomological field theory is not in fact in the literature called the cohomological field theory. I don't know, that's a preferred name for it. Not in the sense of contribution, money at least. All right. So let's try to see what information. What do we need to specify? What information do we need? Actually, I should say, once you've extended to the boundary, it's now easy to write the factorization axioms, because at the boundary of the moduli space, you do have these curves, like you have the boundary divisors, which are really moduli space of smooth curves of, say, lower genus, which touch at the point, and there you simply write the usual decomposition that the space associated to that is the same as the space with the insertion of X and X dual in a base on the dual basis. So once you put the boundary in, it becomes easy to write all the conditions. That's actually why I conceived it. And I write the axioms anyway. All right, what information do we need? So let's have an observation. So in particular, if we have the theory, we have a Frobenius algebra, because we have a theory over a point. So observation is that in the case, this is very trivial, okay? So, I mean, I don't know anything deep about these things anyway. But if the underlying Frobenius algebra is semi-simple as an algebra, then all the classes that you construct from this field theory are tautological. In other words, they must come from large genus surfaces, at least rationally. So let's say, and you've tensored with Q, then all classes you get must come from high genus. Must come from high genus. And that's because in the semi-simple case, well, a genus increasing operation is, of course, throwing this onto a boundary component. That's a map from V to V, and in the semi-simple case, this is an invertible matrix. It's actually diagonal of lambda k inverse, where lambda k are the theta values of the idempotent in the algebra. So because of that, you can increase the genus by putting this thing. If you invert it, of course, everything, well, maybe we should do it with C to be able to diagonalize. Let's do it that way. And then it means that whatever you have in a small genus curve must come from a large genus curve. That by definition means it comes from the tautological classes, the cohomology classes of moduli space for large genus. There's also a conjecture which I think is still open. I couldn't find any sign of a proof that the image, so the tautological subring of MGN bar satisfies Poincaré duality. So if that's the case, and you can detect any class here by integrating, any tautological class by integrating against product of the other classes, and then it's reasonable to actually try to encode the information in the potential of the theory. The potential so encodes all integrals of the TFT classes against tautological classes. Yes, I'll say in a second what the tautological classes are. Conjecture?
Yeah, it is in the algebraic
setting. Probably right.
That's what I was going to ask you. You mean like algebraic cycles or cohomology classes?
That's what I'm saying. I just mean cohomology classes. Although, in the natural examples here, it will tend to be, well, the tautological classes themselves will be constructed algebraically, so that I suppose the question is whether what you write, what you construct here really, well, so No, actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm not sure there's a difference, big difference now, is there? Oh, sorry. I'm a bit. There probably is, because I think for this argument, I've used the fact we know it in cohomology, honest cohomology, rational cohomology, a stable mapping class group is generated by tautological classes. So I suppose let's just take cohomology. No algebraic cycles, no algebraic case theory. No, sorry, I didn't put, maybe I missed the point of the question. Was there a subtext? That...
No, I just was wondering whether you meant cohomology classes.
No, I just mean the cohomology class. Just the image of stable cohomology.
Or in algebra, because it's not known whether the Chow range is the same as the cohomology.
No, I agree with you. So I think I'm just talking about cohomology right now. So as far as I know, it is not known in cohomology, right? It is known, in fact, that for a fixed large genus, the tautological subring is a proper subring there. There are a lot more cohomology classes than come from a tautological one. Therefore, it's not obvious that tautological ring satisfies point-carrier duality at all. And as far as I know, it has not been proved, but I could be wrong. I couldn't find it some searches that my expertise on this is very limited. Right. So, what are tautological classes? In cohomology, if you take, so let's say, over MG, I apologize if I tell things that everybody knows, but it's a bit, I think, hard otherwise. There are not writing formulas at the end to just talk abstractly, not say anything. So the logical classes over MG are the following. Well, you construct the universal curve and over that you have a canonical bundle. So they have a first-turn class, call it psi, and the tautological classes are the integrals along the fiber of the powers of these fellows. Okay. So these being the classes, people usually define the potential of the theory. It's not terribly important, but as a huge thing which is guaranteed to contain everything you can think of, exponential of a sum over the genus, h the minus the genus, no, that's the genus minus 1, sum over n, number of points, let's call z of v1, vn. So v1 and n will be insertion points, v1, vn will be classes, boundary states, and then you multiply them by whatever you can. So psi 1 to the k1, psi n to the kn, and I believe integrate over mgn bar. Maybe put a 1 over n factorial in front, and something like that. It contains inside all the product. There's no obvious reason that I can think of why that would be a particularly good combination. But I suspect it isn't. A lot of the complication that comes in the equation in this subject comes from the fact we have not found somehow the good function which captures the information. And really, all the complicated equations come from complicated changes of variables, from the good function to this one. The only reason I say that is because we have an impression in the case of U1, when we compute things, what naturally goes here is not just a random power series of this type, of exponential type, but something like a theta function, or theta function for various weights. So I'd be very curious if somebody has tried to put modular forms in there instead, and seeing if it gets any nicer or actually gets worse. It's quite possible it gets worse. The point of this is actually known in some form by work of Kontsevich and Witten for a point. So if V is just C, known from Kontsevich. All right. So let's now erase this introductory thing. And I'll quickly say what Gromov-Witten invariants, what you do to get a Gromov-Witten invariant, and then I'll specialize the group. Well, these would be the descendant classes, right? But if you just took k, summation over n, there's sum over k now, summation over all k. So if you put just k equals 0 here, this would be the classes you construct naturally, integrate over mgn. And then multiply by all the tautological classes you can, you have available. And then, so descendant classes would mean, I guess, v1 times I1 to the k would be called descendant c. Incidentally, here's my other sales pitch. Okay. So, it's pretty clear if you take this approach, I mean, cohomology, you're not going to better and get rational information. You might want to try it every prime p separately, try the same thing, in which case it have lots more tautological classes from cohomology operations, but I'm not sure there's a hope of getting that. On the other hand, you could try the same in K-theory, and I think things are much better there because I'll observe the K-theory of the stable mapping class group, so the stable K-theory of MG, open at least, distortion-free. And it's not distortion-free in a stupid way. In other words, if you care, it's distortion-free in a stupid way and you lose all information except the obvious one. Meaning if you tensor with Q first and then take the limit. But if you do things backwards, the other way, to take the limit first, see what you get. You'll find that it's much bigger than you thought. In other words, you get the obvious classes, so the analogs of this in K theory, index bundles of powers of K. You get the K, tautological K classes and a lot of K theory operations in those, and there are no more relations between them. At any finite G, if you tensor with Q, you can express K theory operations in these chaps in terms of tautological things. But actually, that's only true modulo torsion, and in the stable limit, that's no longer true modulo torsion. The modulo torsion gets extended in the K theory. So I think if you were to use K theory properly, it would be possible to do rational calculations and get information that's exactly right, even in terms of torsion. But since I haven't actually done that yet, it's well, maybe I shouldn't have pitched it quite so highly, but anyway. Right, so what's next? Oh, Gromov-Witten. So what do we do for Gromov-Witten? I'll say very little because I know very little, but you take X as a symplectic manifold, compact manifold, and M, define MGN of X, a moduli compactified moduli space of J holomorphic curves. So that is exists by the work of Ruan and Tian. And let's say take V, the space, to be the cohomology of X, and Z of V1 through Vn. What do you do? Well, you pull back by the n evaluation maps some cohomology classes from X over there, and project them by integration the moduli, compactified moduli space of curves, and that is your class. So is the integration along the fiber from MGN of X to MGN. Maybe I should put bars because they're compact. MGN bar of the product of the evaluation classes. So there's been, of course, an enormous amount of work on these by people, some of them are at the conference, but since I have no expertise in this in general, I will not say that. So I'll jump right away to examples. So this is a bit of a toy example. X is BG, G finite. So this is due to Chen and Ruan, I think. But there's a very nice treatment of it in the written subsequently in Jarvis and Kimura. No, I mean, that's an interesting point, yes. Of course it is, because we're taking rational cohomology, except rational cohomology of what? Okay, I have to be careful. So what you should be taking the cohomology of is the loop state of X. Okay, those are the states you want to, in the boundaries are loops, you would like to insert Klaus on the loop space. For a reason which I think is not... Certainly I don't understand the way I would like to. If your target is a manifold, you just reduce things to X. You just get classes in the loop space which come from a point, really. In part because some of our relevant loops really are boundaries of tiny holomorphic disks, and then, of course, you'll only get to see this guy. Well, for BG, that doesn't happen at all. So what you want is the cohomology of loops in BG with rational coefficients, which is H star G of G with rational coefficients, and that is, I think, I'll write it this way, the center of the group ring, because it turns out the Frobenius algebra product to use is the convolution product here. Not the multiply point wise multiplication. So it's because the product here is loop concatenation, and it's related to a construction that is very nicely put together by Sullivan and Schatz. And I think we'll have several talks on the Sullivan Schatz string theory at this conference, so I don't want to review that, but that's the product you get here. And what are maps to BG? They are G bundles over X, so maps to BG, the flat G bundles over X. On X, and what well, the point of automorphism, integration over them is going to be some weighted count. So, on some weighted count, of these. Well, in a sense, it's easier to say what you get for a Kerbal Marx point if you use the base of conjugacy classes. So, if you insert conjugacy classes on boundary components we'll go to a weighted count of bundles with prescribed holonomies, with holonomies in the conjugacy class, with holonomies in conjugacy class. And if you say this way, it's obvious you don't need a base point on the circle. That's good. So, of course, in this case, it's not very hard to compactify, to define the bundles on the nodal curves correctly. You have to allow some orbifold structure at the node in order to still capture the holonomy, so that's explained very nicely in Jarvis and Kimura. You get some sort of coverings of the modulus of curves, and you can have to count points in the fight. But the theory is best described if you use a Bayes' diagonalizing this product as essentially a character's basis. So the character basis, I think you have to use something like chi alpha term, degree of the representation divided by the order of the groups are idempotent, and their traces theta alpha are, I think, is the square of that, deg alpha over order of the group squared, and the final result is that the theory is the sum over alpha of theories for a point scaled by theta alpha to the, I think it's 2 minus 2g, but it may be 2g minus 2, and I forgot. Sorry. Well, it's only, at the end of the day, we're only for the counting. There's not going to be anything else. It's not shocking because the moduli space will actually isolate points. Okay. So now, right, you form this guy here. You're going to have, if your V's are now, right, so if you allow marked points like that, so if your V's are now, let's try this one. So if you put the scale, properly scaled V's inside, you're going to get the sum of the partition function for a point for each alpha with the coefficients in front, minus 2g in front. Let me try again. I said it wrong. Scratch that. If you wrote it, scratch that. If you didn't write it, even better. Right. So, let's take a curve and let's put some two open marked points here. So if you insert these diagonal states, which are this thing, so insert, what should we call this state? E alpha? E alpha and E beta distinct, you get zero. Okay. So if you insert, of course, if you insert one and one, you'll get a lot because you have to write one into idempotence and you get the sum over all alphas. Okay. So now if you insert a theory with descendants, the state one, if you were to insert idempotence, you wouldn't see very much. That's what I said wrong, because there would be mostly zero. But if you insert one with descendant fields, state one with descendant fields. So let's fix the number of marked points and let's fix the genus. Let's insert descendant fields, the state of state one. Then you're going to get a partition function for a point scaled by this number. Finally, now, third attempt. Third time lucky. Insert E alpha with descendant fields. You get zero, so you put an E minus alpha. Okay. Now you're going to get the theory for a point with descendant fields with scaled by. So the information is just a structure constant, all the same information is the same except for a point. Sorry, I didn't say it right. Okay, there's not even a change of variables or anything involved. Right, so finally, I'll use the last 5 minutes to talk about twistings and how you do that for arbitrary G. So actually, let's see, since we're talking about G, what do you do for arbitrary G, so general G? General G, what are would be holomorphic maps? So really, let's think of a complex group. Let's think of a holomorphic picture. Holomorphic maps from a Riemann surface to BG. G is compact, so BG complexified is now a complex manifold. And we're looking at holomorphic, we fix the curve. We're looking at holomorphic maps to BG. The moduli, it's going to be a stack of holomorphic with G bundles, GC bundles on the curve. So for a single point, the theory would just have, which corresponds to integral, we're doing K theory now. So for a single point, we just integrate the trivial bundle. So take the index of the trivial bundle over that, and you get 1. It's not terribly interesting. In the abelian case, it doesn't get more interesting even in the family. In the non-abelian case, it does, but that's it's incomprehensible unless you understand what's going on, and for that, we need a twisted theory. So our way of getting a twistings came from the idea of twisting cohomology theories. But it turns out in this case, the degrees of twisting was introduced by Coates and Giventhal in Gromov-Witten invariant. So let's quickly review that. So twisted GW. So in addition to X, you now choose a vector bundle over X. And essentially we'll do the same construction as before. But before integrating, we're going to multiply by some characteristic classes obtained from E. How so? So it's not exactly from an evaluation. That would not be terribly interesting because that would be the same as a usual theory. You add a marked point. Look at MGN plus 1 of maps to X. You have a special last evaluation map. Sorry about E. Let's leave EN plus 1 to X. So you get En plus 1 pullback of E, leaves over moduli stack. There's a forgetful map to maps with n marked points in 2x with fiber, usually the curve, just the curve itself. So you form the index bundle of this curve in K naught of this guy. And in cohomology, because Giventhal curves work in cohomology, you know, apply multiplicative characteristic class to this index bundle. For example, total churn class, but there could be others. So apply multiplicative characteristic class. And same construction as before. Where was it? This pullback class is then pushed down the modulo of curves, but after multiplied by the characteristic class. So multiply by it before pushing down. And the Givendall Coates paper is not just a definition, it's a theorem, and their theorem gives the formula for a twisted invariant in terms of the untwisted one. So if you wanted to know what the twisted ones were, you can. If you didn't, it tells you you don't need to look at them somewhere. Okay. Alright, for BG, something works and something doesn't anymore. So let's say Givendall and Coates. So it's Givendall. Give a universal formula for untwisted implies twisted. Okay, so what the twisted invariant means for BG? Well, I mean the following, that what's the analog of this now? We fix the curve now, so we don't have to worry. We're going to put in families in a second. So we fix the curve. Oops. So over the curve times the mapping space, which is a moduli space of bundles on sigma, you have a map to BG in the form of, I guess, a principal G bundle, GC bundle. So representation, let's call it E of G, is a vector bundle. And that has an index bundle along E. Index along sigma, sorry, of E is in K naught of that. Sigma. And we like to stay in K series, and now we apply a multiplicative class in K theory. I suppose the only one you can do here would be a determinant. So you have to add a formal variable to have more of those. So det is an example, and you get a line bundle. Get line bundles. And then you need a formal parameter, and you can take the symmetric powers or lambda powers or so on. So lambda classes or ST is lambda T, ST, gamma T, whatever favorite case theory operations you want to apply. So the theorem that comes in now, so for determinants essentially it's due to work with Fried and Hopkins. Theorem that these indexes are computed topologically by the following map. So let's see on the curve of genus G, you fix the curve first. Punch a hole. Write the restriction map from flat bundles on the surface to the boundary. So that's the product of commutator maps. Product of commutators. I'm doing the analog now of counting bundles in case theory. And you will get an induced map, a push forward map from KG. K equivariant of the flat bundles on the surface to K equivariant of the flat bundles on the boundary. And the theorem is that there exists, let's write it this way imprecisely, a twisting for this guy so that pylor star of 1 is the sum over a basis of reps. Actually, no, let's try this way. Pi lower star of 1, inner product with 1 in a Frobenius algebra constructed from G called the Berliner ring is the index. So So the index over this algebraically sophisticated thing is actually captured by a direct image of mapped compact manifolds of some amount of time. So I'll just say the obvious thing now. The obvious thing that this construction makes perfect sense if you have a family of curves. So for smooth curves, it's obvious what to do. And what happens about degeneration? Well, it doesn't work so well if you try to construct and get the wrong answer, because the topology of the space changes. But turns out we don't need a boundary parametrization. So this underlying theorem is that the S1 equivariant is actually easy. Version of KG of G is isomorphic to the representation ring of S1 and the non-equivariant one for the twist. And the choice of splitting gives a strong K-theoretic, what I call the strong K-theoretic TFT. And perhaps I should also add, so there isn't a reduction formula to torus bundle. There isn't a Abelian reduction formula. Reduction formula for the index, for this index by localization. So you can compute it in principle over the modular curve. So what this would entail computing now are explicit description of the bundle you get over the modular curves from this direct image map. So in the Abelian case, we can do it integrally. We know that. We get essentially K-theory operations, the Hodge bundle and the other tautological bundles. In non-Abelian case, because the only way we know how to do is localization, we'll have to invert a few things. And we don't know right now how to do it integrally, but this construction suggests that there is an integral definition. It's a question of how to compute it. I'll stop here. It went way over time.